Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Just going back to Kick, and you know, we're getting kind of besieged with people making comments about that particular app, but the problem in general. One text says, you can install a hidden app that will send you an email every day or week, depends on you, or you can log into the monitoring portal. It logs every single activity on the phone, app uses, every single message sent, regardless of the app, email, Kick, Messenger, etc. Logs all sites visited. There is not one thing done on the phone that's not logged, which is, I suppose, one way of approaching the problem. Can't kids be banned from this app altogether? So there's another. Well, how do you know if they're kids? You see, that's the problem. And someone else says, my marriage just fell apart thanks to Kick. My husband had girlfriends in there. So there you go. We were also talking about the relationship between the eyes and ears and how they work. It seems that they're more closely aligned than had previously been thought. Paddy says dogs and cats constantly move their ears in the direction they're looking. The ears often move first. Dermot says, I've never concentrated so hard on looking. Someone else says, I feel like I can feel my ears move. Talk about the trickery of, well, it's your eardrums that move, apparently. Another texter says, my 90-year-old mother will often say, I can't hear you without my glasses. Well, indeed, that seems to be actually the case. Mairead Lavery joins us once again. Mairead, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. I can't hear you without my glasses.
Yes.
That sounds funny, all right.
My mother used to say, if he was in the back, shh, be quiet while your father turns his corner. As if her speaking would somehow affect his driving. It was actually her speaking used to affect his driving.
It was about concentration. Let them concentrate.
So, you're just back from Berlin?
I am, yeah. First time I've been on a press trip for years and years. And I went to Berlin Green Week. I'd heard an awful lot about it. It's on the go since in 1926, set up by market gardeners to show off their produce. And what Anna May McHugh and the ploughing would do with it. Oh, my goodness. It's all, it's like the ploughing indoors.
Right.
Can you imagine? Now, there's no ploughing going on, of course, but I mean, all the huge stands are there. And what it is a showcase for, there were 66 countries represented with their produce, and basically they take over like a quarter the size of Croke Park, and they absolutely deck it out, and they have all their best produce there, and people telling all the people who are coming through. So 66 countries, all the different parts, regions in Germany, I think there's another 16 of them, then lots of other stands as well. And It's a real festival atmosphere of the place. Mm. So you're in all these different buildings in this kind of, it's called the Berlin Cube. So it's a massive area for exhibitions or, you know, through the course of the year. And you go from one hall to another. So you could be in like 7A and you're looking for 7C and it's up two flights of stairs and across the corridor. And or else you're looking for 8 and you think 8 would be beside 7, not a chance. It's like you have to get through 15 to find 8. And so getting your way around. Now, I mean, if it's still on, it's not finishing until next Sunday.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think there's about 400,000 people go to it. But people make a kind of a few days out of it. Mm. And I must say, I found it very, you know, it was so bright and cheery. Like, can you know, beer gardens come with Germans. You just associate beer gardens in Germany. And so all these indoor beer gardens and everybody's sitting there drinking their big beers and loads of kind of, you know, non-Eurovision music being played. you know, it was very, very good fun. But in Germany, you kind of think of Germany and BMW cars and, you know, Mercedes and Big Steel and, you know, that kind of exports and all urban based. Well, 90% of the German surface, land surface, is actually considered rural. And over half the population live in what are called rural areas. Mm. So you're talking about 44 million people. And It's a really big, it's the second biggest food exporter in the world. We put, I think, was it 12.5 billion we put out there in terms of food and drink exports. The Germans were talking about something like 78 billion worldwide. But they're also big importers of meat, particularly, or of product, ag product, particularly dairy product. So, one of the things they're kind of very concerned about is there's been a big decline in agricultural land use. So you've gone from, what, 35 million hectares in 2012 down to 28.5 million now. Now, that's an awful lot of land to take out of the system. And unlike here, it's not going, well, it is a bit like here, it's not just roads or houses that they're building, or, you know, everybody's getting a 2 acre back garden. It's a lot of it to do with forestation and people, smaller farms getting out of business and land being bought up by, you know, foreign multinationals and just being planted. So there's a lot of concern in Germany, and it came through all the speeches we listened to and everything about up to now, the mantra has been grow or die when it comes to farming. And we visited two farms. One of them was 1,450 hectares, an organic farm. You kind of think that that doesn't go together. You think of organic and small.
You think of small, yeah.
But 1,450 hectares. And then another one was 1,250 hectares conventional beef. So this, and of course it was East Germany, and they would have originally been farmers, you know, collective farms.
Anyway,
now
yeah.
You know, the locals are involved in them. But this mantra for grow or die, certainly it's been beginning to be questioned now. And when they talk about agriculture, they're putting a lot of emphasis on the culture side of agri. And it's not just about, you know, producing output. It is about maintaining the countryside, maintaining the landscape, maintaining that culture. And it's one of the issues that will be of big concern to the Germans when it comes to the renegotiation of the common agricultural policy. First time that I've heard it mentioned anyway, they're saying that in Germany, the top 5% of farmers gets 65% of the EU supports. And there's only about 1,000 in that top 5%. So if they were to not receive as much, the rest could be used to help boost the incomes of people who are full-time farming and who want to stay doing it, but are finding it very difficult because of the scale and all the rest of it. So, you know, it was interesting to see, you know, the different attitudes. One speaker now, he raised an issue around, you know, animal welfare, part-time farmers versus full-time professional farms. And, you know, considering two-thirds of farmers in Germany are actually part-time, I wouldn't think his marks...
Really?
Yeah, two-thirds. I wouldn't think his remarks went down very well. And also in the discussions going on, there was a remark made about Ireland, our dairy production. We pride ourselves on our low-cost dairy production. And it was described as the Ryanair model of dairying. So... You see, now you just wonder, is that a really backhanded compliment or is it a compliment? You know, certainly if you're a fan of Ryanair, you think it is.
It depends.
But it depends.
I doubt it
but
somehow.
When you're in the market for kind of high-end consumer produce, you know, with high quality attached to it, kind of having the tag, the Ryanair of dairy production.
But again exactly at the same time, if they're, I mean, we sell a lot of dairy products into Germany.
We do, and they absolutely love our butter.
Yeah, and so... You'd see dairy producers in Germany would be a bit snippy about that.
Yeah,
so we'd look for something wrong with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yes. And that was it. But anyway, look at it. It's still on. I mean, as an aside, I had been to Berlin when Checkpoint Charlie was there and the Berlin Wall was up. And if you wanted to go to a city where history is being made, even as we speak, in terms of just the redevelopment of the place after the wall came down, you know, you go to Paris and you look at history, and you go to London and you look at way back hundreds of years ago. You go to German and or Berlin, and it's the history of the last 50 years.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah,
it is really, from that point of view, hugely interesting.
Yeah.
So Green Week, put it in the diary. Actually, a hotel room, €85 in the centre of the city.
That's not bad.
Not bad, and very good and really good quality. But beware, we give out about gouging here, and you know, when there's a concert in Croke Park or something like that, tickets go up in the hotels. But when I tried to find out what was the standard room rate, it depends on what's happening in the city at the time and the
demand.
Well,
of course.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you could be paying up to 200 for the same room at another time of the year. But right now in January, €85 would get you a double room.
It'd be pretty cold though in Berlin this time of the year.
Cold but dry.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
Yeah. I'd take it any day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, Save Our Sucklers. What's going on there?
Yeah, Save Our Sucklers. Two types of cows in the country. The dairy ones, they're doing okay. Their numbers are growing up. There are a lot of them in the east and the south of the country. Sucklers, not so good. More Western, I think 43% of the sucklers in the country. Now, these are the, just to tell you, the dairy cows, the suckler cows are the ones that rear a beef animal. Mm. So they're out and all they have is, you know, their calf with them, and the calf stays with them for 9, 10, 11 months, that type of period. Anyway, they're in serious decline at the moment, and particularly in the West. And we're talking about numbers down over 200,000 in the last 5 years. And, the you know, it's all very well to say, go into dairy, but they can't. The people who are, you know, in suckler farming in these parts of the country, they're not able to get into dairy. They're not, you know, the alternative is maybe forestry. So, you know, that's the options you're facing. And by the numbers going down so dramatically, the knock-on business to the vets, the knock-on business to the local community, to the shops, to everything, there is a real impact. So it's about communities, it's about holding on to them. So we're looking to get, Save Our Sucklers petition up. Our target is 20,000 and we're going to way exceed that. Mm. In the first few days, we're on well over 14,000. So, and we've loads of online entries. And if you're interested in this, hashtag Save Our Sucklers, the petition is in this week's Farmers Journal. Want as many people as possible to get signing it. And it's not just about the suckler farms, it's about the communities that they live in.
Yes.
Because another thing that we have for today is the numbers that are going into forestry. And it looks like the likes of Leitrim is literally becoming a Sika spruce desert. You're talking about in 5 years, from 2007 to 2016, the payments going out in forestry in Leitrim, they're up 128%. Now, in Wicklow, they're up massively as well. They're up something like 160% in Wicklow. But there are certain parts of the country, and if you look there, I can show you the map. Mm. There's the green line, and so where is forestry declining? You know, in the parts of the country that can farm adequately, where is it increasing? The parts of the country where there's, you know, real serious restrictions on farming and constraints on farming, and it's difficult to do it. So there's been a lot of policy changes with regards to the suckler cow over the past 5 and 6 years, and some of it needs to be re-looked at, because what you're going to end up doing is, you know, farms aren't viable. There's a real knock-on effect on the community. And it's not just, it's back to this agriculture thing. You know, that culture of agri in local areas.
Yes.
You're going to have a problem with it.
Yeah. Now, on the farms, though, it's calving week, or calving starts this week.
Oh, I tell you now, there's a lot of farmers out there on tether hooks. They're getting ready. The first calf or two has been dropped. And calf welfare standards, absolutely crucial. If you have a calf that's born that is healthy, that you keep it healthy, you get it to 8 or 10 months, you get it to a year old, it's so much better for it. I mean, if it catches pneumonia, there's lifelong consequences. If it gets a scour, anything like that, there's lifelong consequences in terms of, you know, its ability to perform at its best. And so right now, with the expansion, particularly in dairy, farmers really need to ask themselves, have we grown the space for our calves proportionately? Are we trying to fit more calves into the small space? Mm. Have we enough labour to cover it? Because calves are labour intensive. Treating them, teaching them how to drink, you know, keeping them, an eye on them, keeping them fed, keeping them bedded, all that, keeping everything clean. Because if you've got a house with calves in it, and what lots of people do is they have a shed and maybe they have 10 calves in a pen and they move them up along, and you know, they're with little groups of 10, but if there's an infection goes in there, it could literally goes through them. So what you need: proper housing, good ventilation, sufficient milk feeding and mixing equipment, water drinkers, plenty of straw. But there's five freedoms. And I mean, if you apply this to think of this in terms of the human race, freedom from hunger and thirst.
Yeah.
This is the questions now farmers have been asked to ask themselves. Are their calves free? They have freedom from hunger and thirst. They're freedom from discomfort. Wouldn't we all love that? Mm. Freedom from pain, injury and disease. Again, that's the target that you're going to produce. Freedom to express normal behaviour, so that there's enough space for them to run around and jump out. And, you know, when the weather gets a little bit better now in March, that they're able to go out onto a paddock and chase around the fields the way the little lambs do. Mind you, you know, in really wet night like last night, if you had little lambs born in it, the chances of survival would be very, very poor.
If it's in a field.
Or a calf, for that matter. And then the freedom to express normal behaviour. And fifth one, the freedom from fear and distress. So for their lives, while they're here, they have a happy life and they really get on with having a lot of fun.
Well, wouldn't we all like that?
Wouldn't we all like that? So they're the five freedoms.
Someone says, I worked at Greenwick for a couple of years in the mid-80s for the Irish pubs. Great experience and great fun. So I assume there was something of an Irish contingent there apart from...
You'd like maybe to have seen the butter and the beef. But the very first thing I saw was the Guinness pub. And, you know, what's this? Down from the mountain, Katie Daly.
Yeah. Ah, right. Okay. And so no stereotypes being used there.
No stereotypes. But I'll tell you, that place was... Actually, there were a couple of Irish pubs in throughout the whole Greenwick area, and the people were sitting there and they had their half pints of Guinness, not pints now, half pints, and Irish coffees, and the place was thronged.
I'm not surprised. Murray, thanks a million for coming into us. Murray Lavery there from the Farmers Journal, back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas